Gerhardt's back.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
From NJ1015.com, this is the new Jim Gerhardt Podcast.
Well, we have the 4th of July weekend coming up, and the 4th of July and all that it stands for. And I've had this rolling around in my mind for a while, and I thought this might be a very good time to get it out by way of explanation of some of my attitudes that I've had that I know go a little bit overboard perhaps for some people. I'd mentioned once before in relation to something else, I think this had to do with beer drinking, really, and my somehow a good feeling I have toward police, law enforcement. This would apply to the military, but I think to the country in general, and it goes back to an early memory. And again, it is said that your earliest memories, back as far as you can go, are things that if you look back will have had a great significance in shaping your attitudes and your walk through life. Now, I have had the great good fortune to have been around for quite a while. And when World War II began, I was a child. And I do remember certain things about it. And one is a very lasting memory. And that is, and this is what sticks in mind, my greatest memory of it was getting up in the morning, one morning, and I think getting ready for school. And I heard screaming, like a lady screaming. And again, I don't remember how old I would have been, eight, seven, eight, nine, something like that, maybe even younger than that. But I heard screaming, and I went and looked, as everybody did, and there, two houses down, was a neighbor, Mrs. Creasy, Ms. Minnie, as we all called her. And Ms. Minnie was in the yard screaming, and she was on her knees, and there was a car, an olive drab two-door or four-door Ford sedan, and a young Army officer. And he was, it would be Army at that time. There was no separate Air Force at that time. And he was standing there. So the obvious thing was, as it turned out, her son Pete had been killed in the Battle of Midway. Pete was on a member of what was known as Torpedo Squadron 8. There was a movie made about it called One Came Back. During the Battle of Midway, which was the sort of the turning point of the war, happened in 1942, not too long after Pearl Harbor. It didn't take us too long to get our act together. But anyway, he was the radio man gunner in the back of a torpedo bomber, Torpedo Squadron 8, all of which were shot down in the attack. In the meantime, they had sunk an incredible number of Japanese ships, pretty much destroyed the Japanese Navy, they and their colleagues. But anyway, Pete was killed in the Battle of Midway, and I do remember, and I can still almost hear, you know, the response of the poor mother to that. But at that time, from then on, there were so many more instances like that. And these were what, to me, were the big kids. And there were kids mostly that I knew. And then when the war started, they went off, and very quickly, the training was very quick, off they went. And often they came home in bags. And again, as I said, these were kids who were very good to me. In fact, I do remember the war broke out. There was an old house in town set kind of on a knoll that had been abandoned. It was like Central Casting, send me a haunted house, that we used to play in. And they had an outbuilding that these big kids at the time had turned into kind of a play place, a clubhouse, if you want. And they would let us hang out. And I do remember that we were down there playing. The big kids, who later went off to the war, they were doing, you know, hammering, making stuff in there, setting up their clubhouse. And we little kids were kind of hanging out. And they were talking about this war, the Japanese and Pearl Harbor. I had no idea what it was till I got home. Parents explained this to me. But the point is, off they went. And there were so many of these kids that I remember, that I knew, and so many instances like that, that I just intuitively take a very pro-positive attitude toward the military and the country, because although things have changed terribly since then, these were people who died. They gave their lives willingly for the country, the values that the country stood for, we all perceive that it stood for. Now, these values have mostly been trampled on right now. And I think most glaringly, obviously, the First Amendment. But this gets into something else. But, you know, times have changed so dramatically. But I still feel an obligation anytime it comes up to stand up for them, to defend them. And I think there's no way that I'm going to become a child of my time. It An English writer, V.K. Chesterton, once said, and he was a Catholic Christian writer, and he wrote the line, says, only the church can save a man from the degrading servitude of being a child of his time. Well, this is not the church, but I think only sometimes memories and association like that. Einstein once said that our entire view of the world begins with experience and ends with experience. It's what will happen to you. And this is what happened to me. I grew up very young child in this environment of this that was going on and all of these people who weren't coming back. And, of course, as a child, you're not sure exactly what's going on, except it's bad. And I think I have this tendency to think of them anytime that you're in a situation in which you would actively support military or the traditional firm values that made this country great, even though they've been blown all to hell right now. So I would like to just end this little chat with this particular bit of Americana. I'm Jim Gearhart, speaking for my very, very good friends at CSI Group, CSICPA.com. You can get the story and you can meet these great people, Peter and Sandra Greco. They got the sons, Joe and Robert, John and James, and of course, all of their associates. Peter and Sandra built this up from back in the 70s into one of the largest financial institutions in the state of New Jersey. And I have to thank the CSI Group because after my accident, when I was pretty much on my own, you know, financially, had it not been the fact that Peter has handled my finances for a good number of years right now and had things set up, and I was very pleasantly surprised that, hey, you can make it. You can sit on the veranda of stately Gearhart Manor, lobbing silver dollars at the mockingbirds, sipping a julep and relaxing, thanks to the CSI Group. And these people can do wonders with your estate planning, too. I know we talk about them with the taxes. Talk to the CSI Group. Talk to Peter and his family about estate planning. They will set up a program for you that will certainly set you through the hard times when they occur. And even if they don't, you can make the good times even better. So talk for estate planning, any financial service, really. I urge you to do what I do because it's worked so well for me. And that is talk to the CSI Group, Peter and Sandra Greco. And that is at CSICPA.com. Go there and you'll see these wonderful people and all the great things they can do. So give them a call or talk to them. CSICPA.com. Well, I'd mentioned the rather dramatic change in time since those days that I was talking about back in, I guess, what you would call, in a sense, the golden days of America, because this is when we had just come out of the war the first time as a world power. Eisenhower was in heaven, you know, all's well with the world. And things were relatively stable. But the marked contrast with today, it's like going from Stars and Stripes Forever to the political correct... Yeah. Well, you get the idea. But a couple of things that came up. And one that I remembered, there's a story at a little school called Evergreen College. They're probably a university now. Everybody's got three students in a university in the state of Washington. I spent a couple of years working in Seattle. And I remember Evergreen State College was a little school. It was the equivalent of what we used to call the state teachers' colleges. Now, they had as their mascot, to show you, a creature, a mascot called a gooey duck. Now, the gooey duck, if really, this is no kidding, and but if you saw a gooey duck, the first response... A gooey duck has to be the ugliest living creature ever created. It is a giant clam, and I spell G-E-O-D-U-K. It's an Indian word, a Puyallup Indian word, means deep, dig deep, dig fast, because they're very edible. And there's a market for gooey ducks because they are giant clams, but the clam itself is about 3 feet under the sand, and this long neck that sticks up. And then you go around and you see that, then they dig the gooey duck out. There's a market for it because they're sold in California as abalone, which would be much more expensive, but nobody knew the difference. A gooey duck, it's like a clam on one end with a shell, but this long neck, and if you see it, the first one I saw was at a very famous place in Seattle called the Pike Place Market. And they had them laid out there in the seafood section. And you look and you're started, it looked like a giant black male procreative appurtenance. It's absolutely crazy. So when I saw the Evergreen College, I probably should have known that they're going to do something silly. Well, it was the Evergreen College, university, whatever the heck it is now, that got the bright idea that on some day or days, all the white people should leave the campus. Why? I'm not exactly sure. But the outcome could be a tragic outcome is that one professor, a biology professor, refused to leave. And he was a very liberal person, but he said that was going too far to close down the school for absolutely no reason, and he was not going to leave. Well, the upshot of it is, after a lot of tumult and shouting, that this man is afraid to go back. He left the campus. He had to, under the threats, he had to move his family into some undisclosed location because fear for their lives. And this is how serious this has gotten. You know, we had the shooting of the congressman and all. So this thing has gotten very, very serious. So that was Evergreen College and their gooey ducks. And we thought the gooey ducks were wacky. Here's another one. There's a town in Wisconsin called Oconomowoc. Oconomowoc. I think I got that right. Never heard of it. But Oconomowoc got in the news because they have a sign as you go into the town that said, "The churches of Oconomowoc welcome you." Well, of course, the Freedom From Religion Foundation and the ACLU and the Justice Warriors and, you know, all everybody got together, descended upon the town, demanded they take the sign down, the sign that says, "The churches of Oconomowoc welcome you," is unconstitutional because it is not neutral toward all faiths. What? It just said the churches of. I don't know how you would do that. You put up a sign, it would have to be 7 stories high if you had to mention every specific church that welcomed you. And you would have to say the churches, the mosques, the temples, the synagogues. Perhaps they have a ziggurat for Zoroastrians they'd have to put down there. Since this is Wisconsin, there are probably people who worship Gorgonzola the cheese god. And so they would have to have that. It's probably some guy, I picture him as being kind of an average guy named Roscoe B. Evans, who happened to see an image of the Virgin in a jar of Hormel pig knuckles. And so he started a church in his garage. But, I mean, how silly can you get? The Freedom From Religion Foundation said some of the city fathers who have decided that, well, the sign doesn't endorse any religion. What's your problem? But they say that this group, they target communities that are not affluent, who do not have the financial resources to fight back. So they're just out there strictly to cause trouble. That, you know, plainly and simply. So this whole thing going on is absolutely incredible. They had an instance in South Jersey that was somewhat similar to the Gooey Duck College. We used to call it, you know, the University of Gooey Duck because it was so silly. Once you saw a gooey duck, you'd never take anything seriously. That was, look it up, G-E-O-D-U-K. You'll love it. But only native, I guess, to the coastal part of the state of Washington. One time, a stupid event took place in South Jersey. I believe it was a Walmart. It could have been one of the other stores, Kmart or something. I think it was Walmart. And just during a regular shopping day, some idiot got on the intercom. I don't think they ever found out who it was, whether he was black, white, you know, Paisley or South Sea slash other ethnically. But he got, and all of a sudden said, "Attention shoppers, will all black shoppers please leave the building?" And now my guess is, I wasn't there, but I guess most black shoppers just laughed and said, "What a jerk." But there was a lawsuit, actually brought a $1 million lawsuit by a person who wasn't even there. I think he was from Philadelphia, which was some miles away at the time. And he wanted $1 million because this had upset him so much that he couldn't work. And he was having all kind of physical problems. I hope it was thrown out of court because I never heard any more of that. But it was really scary how people will bring these lawsuits for the most ridiculous reasons. Things like that happen, and they're just stupid. But people do stupid things. It didn't hurt anybody, and it was dumb as hell. And I think, you know, they could have caught the person who did it and taken him out in the parking lot and pelted him with orts would have been fine. But it was scary because I thought, okay, now what if I go on the air and somebody, a guest or something, says something, anything, doesn't matter what, somebody could say, "Oh, I got so upset by this, I couldn't work." They had, remember one of the Judge Judy episodes. Generally, the Judge Judy episode, the case was always the same. It was a gift, Your Honor. "No, Your Majesty." It wasn't a gift. It was a debt. But they had one, and she asked this guy. He was very well dressed, impeccably groomed, very handsome guy of sort of mature years, in a gray flannel pinstripe suit. And she asked him, she said, "Well, what is your occupation, Mr. Stone?" He says, "I'm on disability." And Judge Judy said, well, what is your disability? He said, Your Honor, every time somebody just says the word work, I get all nervous. So the government's giving him disability. So I just throw these out as a couple little examples of how we've gone stark, raving, damn mad. A little bit more to come. I want to get back to the holiday, the 4th of July, coming up after this. Hi, I'm Jim Gearhart, and absolutely delighted to get to talk with you again on behalf of Rob Dukansky at RE/MAX First Advantage. Rob, of course, is the agent, as I've told you so many times, that I would call without thinking twice if I wanted to sell my home. Rob will guarantee to sell your home at a price and a deadline that you agree to, or he'll buy your home. And working with Rob does not obligate you to anything. If you think Rob's not doing the job, and very few people have ever thought that, Rob will let you out of the contract. You're free and clear. You walk away friends. Now, how about this? Rob picked up an expired listing in Carteret where another agent had no success even after 199 days on the market. But with Rob's aggressive marketing and long list of qualified buyers, bam, sold in 12 days for top dollar. The Wall Street Journal ranked Bob the number one agent in the state of New Jersey and in the top 75 agents out of 1.2 million in the entire United States. Good man, good business, do great work. Call the agent I would call if I were selling my home, Rob Dukansky, 855-350-1015, 855-350-1015, or go online to robsellsnj.com. And boy, does he sell NJ. robsellsnj.com. Then you just go home, you get the boxes from the liquor store, and you start packing. And here's Brian Sedillo now, my professional partner on this venture. And Brian's going to tell you about a big contest we have coming up. I think that'll interest you.
Thanks, Jim. We've been saying it all month long. Win a pair of Beats headphones by Dr. Dre from the Jim Gearhart podcast in New Jersey 101.5. See the Beats contest at nj1015.com/contest. If you haven't done so already, find the box for the episode 629. That's this week's date, 629, and enter the code 25 years, the number 2, the number 5, and years, lowercase, for your chance to win. This is the last week to enter, so listen to Speaking Millennial, Forever 39, and the New Jersey Guys podcast for additional codes. And good luck from New Jersey 101.5.
I know it seems that I'm somehow fixated on political correctness, which is true, because it seems to me that that is the biggest danger we have right now. There's a series on cable television, I think a Smithsonian, maybe one of the channels is running, about the ways the world will end. And they go from the asteroid impact to great volcanoes, Earth shifting on its axis, pandemics, wars. It seems to me that we're probably, before any of those things happen, we're probably going to extinct ourselves through just sheer asininity. So, speaking of the atomic, and there may be some truth to this, because, and I'll tie this in with something we talked about a little bit earlier, that Woody Allen, talking about the accidental atomic exchange that wipes out the world. Woody Allen in the movie Sleeper, remember the character came back from being dead so many years, he was cryogenically thawed out, and off he went. But he was telling about how the world ended, the atomic war. And they said, well, who got the bomb? The Russians get the bomb or somebody Chinese get the bomb? He said, no, it was Albert Shanker, who was the head of the New York Teachers Union, when Shanker got the bomb. So I was going to say, we worry about North Korea and Russia. What if whoever's doing the stuff at Evergreen State College, what if the head gooey duck gets the bomb? And you've seen that somehow the radical left is almost openly goading unstable people to do bad things, like the shooter we had of the congressman. But and one of the manifestations of this is this has been going on for a few years, changing, expunging names of college mascots. As far as I know, they didn't expunge the gooey duck, although there probably was some organization that said this is disrespectful to gooey ducks, and now it's the Evergreen State fighting inert mineral salts. or something of the same, dust bunnies. But anyway, you remember that any college that had as a mascot, even the pros, the Washington Redskins, that had Indians, now is in the, there are those who demand that it's changed. Now, the demand is not that I see coming from American Indians or Native Americans or whatever. Many of them, the ones I know and have known and talked to, are very proud of it because they picked this name because it's a symbol of courage. They love that. At the College of William and Mary, which I think is the second oldest college in the country down in Virginia, there was a big move because they were known as Indians. They were referred to as the tribe. Well, they, of course, the staff, the professors and all, the politically correct, all whites, had decided that, no, that that is demeaning and we have to change the name. Well, the local Indians protested. They were proud of that, and they should be proud of it, justly proud of it. But I was thinking, college songs, man, maybe this is something that I ran across that may be prototypical. And I know that at one time there was some talk sometime back about Rutgers changing the words to one of their school songs. I don't know whether it was a fight song or one of the songs, because it had the word men in it. So I also some of these sports are prone to violence, and I'm sure that there are people who, have problem with that. So maybe this is something that you might consider. This was written and proposed for one of our major Ivy League colleges, and it is the perfect politically correct football fight song.
Harvard, fight, 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 demonstrate to them our skill. Albeit they possess the might, nonetheless we have the will. How we will celebrate our victory, we shall invite the whole team up for tea. How jolly! Hurl that spheroid down the field and fight, fight, fight. Harvard, fight, 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 impress them with our prowess, do. Oh, fellas, do not let the crimson down, be of stout heart and true. Come on, chaps, fight for Harvard's glorious name. Won't it be peachy if we win the game? Oh, goody, let's try not to injure them, but fight, fight, fight. Let's not be rough, though. Fight, 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 and do fight fiercely. Fight, fight, fight.
Well, enough foolishness for one day. We do have a very serious event coming up, the 4th of July. And I'd like to sort of go out with this particular piece. This was done as part of a Broadway show. Someone once wrote a show called Teddy and Alice. It was about Theodore Roosevelt, President Teddy Roosevelt, and his daughter Alice. And they took John Philip Sousa songs, and of course Stars and Stripes Forever is one, and they put lyrics to it. But this was a big production number on the stage. Teddy Roosevelt, in this particular number, Teddy Roosevelt was making a speech. He was running for re-election, so you'll hear some of that in the beginning. But then he gets down to the Stars and Stripes Forever, and I love this version of it. No, the show never got anywhere, really. I think it only had a couple of performances. But this, I think, lasted. And again, remember, this sort of, perhaps a tad over the line to the way many of us feel. But I can remember, as a kid, 18-year-old in boot camp, standing on the grinder, as we called it, this huge Saturday mass of people, morning, everybody out there in their dress uniforms, their little leggings, you know, and the officers with their resplendent uniforms. And they'd have this parade, and we're all standing there at a rigid attention, but you can hear in the background the band doing Stars and Stripes Forever. It gets closer, it gets louder, and I got goosebumps right now thinking about that. It was something. But anyway, let's say that Teddy Roosevelt had a chance to express his feelings about this country, which I must say, for reasons that I have heretofore given, this.
Now, I know perfectly well what some of you special interest boys out there are thinking. God help the country if he gets 4 more years. Well, I'm here to tell you, like it or not, I'm taking a shot. I swore to give my country all I've got, and that's what I'll do. The red, white, and blue has got an IOU from me, so I'll ask you to prepare your ears for 4 more years of my country, 'tis of thee. My country, 'tis of thee, and you bet I won't forget it's your country, 'tis of thee, too. If elected when the votes have been cast, I'll build on the past and promise you a future built to last. To hold it in trust, to keep it or bust, to do whatever must be done, by George! And if they say I'll have to pay a high price for liberty, my price for liberty, pay I will. And stamp the bill, the price for our liberty paid. Now a lot of people say that I brag, I wave the flag, and I'll not say they lie, no, never. Till the day that I die, I won't deny, I'll be proud to wave the stars and stripes forever. And the hour that it falls from my hand, give me your word to let it not touch the ground for a moment. Keep old glory waving high. Let it fly o'er this land for which it stands. Yes, keep it flying for all to see. And let it fly from every home, every spire, every pole, and yes, my friends, in every heart, till we're part of one endeavor, which is to live and to die for one goal, one common goal, that this our land will fly the stars and stripes forever. I can hear you saying that I'm being jingoistic and dismissing what I've said. Why do people make a dirty word of jingoistic? When I hear them, I see red. Yes, I'm seeing red and white and blue, the same red, white, and blue that you see. And I want the world to see it too, and I'll keep waving till they do see. I'll defend the country it was made for. Yes, and I'll defend it unafraid. For freedom doesn't come for free. It's up to me and you to see it's paid for. Yes, sir, I wave the flag day and night. It's a great way to build up the bicep. If you want a good solid right, grab a penna and follow me. Side by side, high and wide as you go, all it takes is the spirit to endeavor. And they'll see that flag and they'll know our only flag will be the stars and stripes forever. Try it, anyone can fly it, everybody follow me. Nothing to it, anyone can do it, all together, 1, 2, 3. To and fro, and now you gotta go and wave it for the world to see. Wave it all you might now, everybody might now, glory, hallelujah. What a sight now, fill the skies!
The flag was so high, it flies. The people fight to wave the stars and my glory.
So have yourself a very happy, fulfilling 4th of July, and while you're celebrating it, have a great time, but at the same time, remember, the things that this stands for really is the beginning of this great country. Give that some thought. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to the new Jim Gerhardt Podcast.
Still cooking, and it's bigger than ever.
From NJ1015.com.